Number of years ago, there was a fellow that I took, and I haven't seen this man for quite a number of years now, but I took him to a courthouse where he had a fine to be paid. And we actually were standing in front of a Dutch door with the upper half being opened. And he made a rather nasty remark to the clerk. And the clerk said to him, "You know I can have you arrested." And I told him he'd better calm down. And he said, "You mean because they have the authority?" "Well, yeah. They have the authority to do with you as they please. And if you don't learn from the things that you have done, you're just going to get into worse trouble." And we see that all through life, that there are some who are just rebellious, and you know, there's that child who is rebellious and is disciplined by his parents and yet continues to do the same things over and over again. How do you respond to discipline? How do you respond when something has happened to you that you don't like because you had not been acting properly? You had not been doing what you should have been doing. Are you one of those who, like that child, is hard-headed? Or do you become compliant, recognizing that you have a responsibility to be obedient? There's that saying that's often been made, I suppose, in different terms, that would sound something like this, that those who don't learn from their past sins are doomed not only to repeat them, but to suffer from them. We read earlier in this service from Daniel chapter 9, and that was the concern that Daniel had. Here we are, Jeremiah has said that there's 70 years of exile, and we're coming up to the end of 70 years, and I don't see any change in the way that Israel is living, that the Israelites are living. And indeed, when they come to the land of Judah and Jerusalem, you find in the book of Nehemiah in particular a number of the sins that the people are involved in. The Jews have married women from various other nations against the command of God. The merchants are coming in on the Sabbath to sell their wares. And when Nehemiah shuts the gates at sundown on the day before the Sabbath, they wait outside until the gates are going to be opened again. And he says to them, "If you do that anymore, I'm going to use force against you." They just aren't learning. And so it is that there were a number of sins that the people of Israel and Judah were involved in, and it's because of that that they were sent into exile. Now, have they learned? Daniel says, no, they haven't. And Nehemiah and Ezra really recognized that, no, they hadn't really learned. And so there was a book that was written. A book that was written in order to tell Israel, to remind the Israelites, you need to turn to the Lord and to be satisfied with Him and to honor Him. Otherwise, you're going to go into exile again. Do you really want that to happen? Do you not really recognize, Israel, that you need to turn from your sins? Should it not be that we also look to see what God would have us to do, that we would not suffer from our sins? It's discouraging for us to think that there used to be 5 congregations in the New York City metropolitan area. Well, rather in New York City itself. and that there were other congregations of the Reformed Presbyterian Church in the metropolitan area. And we are what's left. May God be merciful to us and guide us that we might worship Him, that we might honor Him as we ought to do, and that we might see the work of His kingdom being advanced. The book that was written was named Chronicles. And someone, you know, it's dangerous for a minister to say, if you want me to preach on something, why, let me know what it is. So someone said, how about, I haven't heard a series on Chronicles. And when you look at 1 Chronicles, especially the first 9 chapters, you might wonder, why, Pastor, did you take him up on that? But you see, that's what this message is. In fact, in one of the books I've read of those who comment on the books of Chronicles, he says, this is really more of a sermon than a history. Now, it's not the way that we normally would preach, to begin by listing a whole lot of names. But as we read chapter 1, I'll try not to stumble over too many of the words, but consider what names you recognize there and why you recognize them. And then notice that every once in a while there's just a brief comment that's made about a particular name. Why is that comment made? God doesn't waste words in the Scriptures. But the Scriptures are given to us, and as the Apostle has said, they are profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness. May God bless us as we consider the books of Chronicles. 1 Chronicles chapter 1. Adam, Seth, Enosh, Kenan, Mahalalel, Jared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The sons of Japheth: Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshach, and Taras. The sons of Gomer: Ashkenaz, Riphath, and Togarma. The sons of Javan: Elisha, Tarshish, Kittim, and Rodanim. The sons of Ham: Cush, Egypt, Put, and Canaan. The sons of Cush: Seba, Havilah, Sabta, Raamah, and Sabtika. The sons of Raamah: Sheba and Dedan. Cush fathered Nimrod. He was the first on earth to be a mighty man. Egypt fathered Ludim, Anamim, Lahabim, Naphtuhim, Pathrusim, Kazluhim, from whom the Philistines came, and Kaphtorim. Canaan fathered Sidon, his firstborn, and Hath, and the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, the Arkites, the Sinites, the Arvadites, the Zemarites, and the Hamathites. The sons of Shem: Elam, Asher, Arpachshad, Lud, and Aram. The sons of Aram: Uz, Hul, Gether, and Meshech. Arpachshad fathered Shelah, and Shelah fathered Eber. To Eber were born 2 sons. The name of the one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided. And his brother's name was Joktan. Joktan fathered Almadad, Shalaph, Hazarmaveth, Jera, Hadoram, Uzal, Dikla, Obal, Abimael, Sheba, Ophir, Havilah, and Jobab. All these were the sons of Joktan. Shem, Arpachshad, Shelah, Eber, Peleg, Reu, Serug, Nahor, Terah, Abram, that is Abraham. The sons of Abraham: Isaac and Ishmael. These are their genealogies. The firstborn of Ishmael: Nebaioth and Kedar, Abdiel, Mibsam, Mishma, Duma, Massa, Hadad, Tema, Jeter, Naphish, and Kedema. These are the sons of Ishmael. The sons of Keturah, Abraham's concubine: she bore Zimram, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. The sons of Jokshan: Sheba and Dedan. The sons of Midian: Epha, Epher, Hanok, Abida, and Eldea. All these were the descendants of Keturah. Abraham fathered Isaac, the sons of Isaac, Esau, and Israel. The sons of Esau, Eliphaz, Reuel, Jeush, Jalam, and Korah. The sons of Eliphaz, Teman, Omar, Zepho, Gatam, Kenaz, and Timnah, Amalek, and of Timnah, Amalek. The sons of Reuel, Nahath, Zerah, Shammah, and Mizah. The sons of Seir, Lotan, Shobal, Zibeon, Anna, Dishon, Ezer, Dishan. The sons of Lotan, Hore, and Hemam. Lotan's sister was Timnah. The sons of Shobal, Alvan, Manahath, Ebal, Shepho, and Onam. The sons of Zibeon, Aya, and Anah. The son of Anah, Dishon. The sons of Dishon, Hemdan, Eshban, Ithran, and Karan. The sons of Ezer, Bilhan, Zaavan, and Achan. The sons of Dishon, Uz, and Aaron. These are the kings who reigned in the land of Edom before any king reigned over the people of Israel. Bela, the son of Beor, the name of his city being Dinhaba. Bela died, and Jobab, the son of Zerah of Bozrah, reigned in his place. Jobab died, and Husham of the land of the Temanites reigned in his place. Husham died, and Hadad, the son of Bedad, who defeated Midian in the country of Moab, reigned in his place, the name of his city being Avith. Hadad died, and Samla of Masreka reigned in his place. Samla died, and Shaul of Rehoboth on the Euphrates reigned in his place. Shaul died, and Baal-Hanan, the son of Achbor, reigned in his place. Baal-Hadad died, and Hadad reigned in his place, the name of his city being Pi, and his wife's name was Mehetabel, daughter of Metred, the daughter of Mezahab, and Hadad died. The chiefs of Edom were chiefs Timnah, Alvath, Jetheth, Aholibamah, Elah, Pinon, Kenaz, Teman, Mibzar, Magdiel, and Iram. These are the chiefs of Edom. May God bless to us the reading of this portion of his word and teach us from it. Well, let's first learn a little bit about this book, which used to be one book as it was originally written. We have 1st and 2nd Chronicles. And apparently the reason for that is that when the 70 translated the Hebrew into the Greek, which we call the Septuagint, they didn't have a scroll long enough to get the whole book of Chronicles in there, so they made it two volumes. That's what typically happens when you translate, that it becomes a lengthier document. And so it was that here, as they translated, it became a lengthier document. And the purpose here is, as we've already noted, is to encourage God's people to live obediently, remembering that they have already gone into exile for their sins, and that they need to learn from that. They should not be going back to those same sins, but that they instead should be walking in the way of the Lord and being obedient to Him. If you were to look at the Hebrew Bible, you would notice that Chronicles is the last book. You might recall that when Jesus came to the disciples in Luke chapter 24, there in the upper room, the doors being locked, he came into their midst, having risen from the dead, and he opened up to them the scriptures, as a makes reference there to the law, the prophets, and the Psalms. And that's the way that the Old Testament was usually referred to. The law, the testament, and the Psalms. Or actually, the word Psalms is used sometimes, but the broader term would be writings. And Chronicles would be one of the books of the writings. not just the books of poetry as we know them, but the books of Chronicles. In our Bibles, of course, we have the Chronicles put next to the a four-volume work of Samuel and Kings. 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings as a four-volume history of the kingdoms of Israel and Judah. And so, as you look at 1 Chronicles and 2 Chronicles, you begin to think, well, this is a history. And so, doesn't it belong up there? And so that's where it was placed in our English Bibles. But this was known as the last book of the Bible among the Jews. And we find a bit of a reference to that in Matthew chapter 23, verse 35. Jesus there is addressing the Jews. If I can get the papers to quit sticking together. Okay, 23:35. He's talking about the hypocrites who are there. And in verse 35 he says, So that on you may come all the righteous blood shed on earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the sanctuary and the altar. Now you see what Jesus is doing there. What was the first murder that took place in Scripture? Abel. Cain murdered Abel. And when you put Chronicles in as the last book of the Old Testament, there is a murder that is found in there in 2 Chronicles chapter 24, verse 22, and it's this Zechariah. And so Jesus is saying, here are all these murders that have taken place from Abel to Zechariah. There are no more after Zechariah that are noted in the Scriptures. And so Jesus is kind of showing us that this is indeed the last book of the Hebrew Bible. So now we have read 1 Chronicles chapter 1. And you see that it takes you from Adam to Israel. And please note that when it says here are the descendants of Abraham and then you have Isaac, that it says his sons are not Esau and Jacob, but Esau and Israel. It's giving that glorious name, a much more glorious name. Wouldn't you rather be called a prince than a cheater? Because that's what those names mean. And so here he is referred to as Israel. Okay, that gives you a little bit of background for this book of Chronicles. And what we are being shown here, especially in the first chapter, is that Jesus Christ is Lord over all, or the Messiah reigns, and God is Lord over the nations, but the nations are living in rebellion against God. After all, much of the history is going to be known by the Jews as they return to Jerusalem and Judah. And all he has to do is mention a number of names, and that's going to come to mind. You mention the people from Adam to Noah. And then what happens? The flood. You know that the flood has taken place. And why did the flood take place? Because of the rebellion of the people of the world at that time. And so all of them were destroyed in the flood. The one thing that we can say about them is that at least they were fruitful and multiplied. At least they grew and went into the various parts of the land. And so we have, after the time of Noah, we have his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. He begins with Japheth. And while the names are not names you would automatically recognize, they are names that let you know various parts of the earth. And this is a lot of what we find here in 1 Chronicles chapter 1 is a quotation from Genesis chapters 10 and 11, and then in regard to Esau from Genesis chapter 36. Japheth, there's one that's mentioned there, Javan, the father of the Greeks. There is Tarshish, and if you look on the map of that I have in the in one of the books of the world of that time, it shows Tarshish to be the southern half of what is now Spain and Portugal. Tarshish. That's probably where Jonah was trying to go when he got on the ship. Kittim. That's been important in the Reformed Presbyterian Church because of the mission we had in Kittim, which is Cyprus. Okay, so you see, these are names that are ancient names, but they are descendants of Japheth, the son of Noah. Ham, well, he's the father of those Canaanite tribes that the Israelites were to dispossess. If you notice, as we read through there, a number of those names, the Hivites, the Girgashites, and so forth, they were all to be displaced by the Israelites when they came into the land of Canaan. But then there were also others, Cush, and which would be Ethiopia. Now, this one says Egypt, this translation says Egypt, whereas it would be Mitzrayim in the original, which is the other, the ancient name for Egypt. It may even be used nowadays for all I know, but Egypt is the way that we know it. But then we come to Shem. And it's from Shem that we get the term Semitic. Anti-Semitism. Because it's opposing the descendants of Shem. It's from Shem that Abraham comes. But he doesn't really get down to the descendants of Jacob until we get to the next chapter. So he is dealing here with Ishmael and the sons of Keturah as descendants of Abraham. Keturah, remember, is the name of the lady that he married after Sarah died. And so as an old man, as an even much older man, he became the father of a number of sons. But there was also Ishmael. And Ishmael really lived in rebellion against his parents. Then we come to Esau. And Esau is another one who lived in rebellion against God. And what we are told here about Esau is that they had kings before the sons of Israel had kings. Verse 43, these are the kings who reigned in the land of Edom before any king reigned over the people of Israel. And this is almost a quotation from Genesis chapter 36, where you have the generations of Esau given, with one slight addition that emphasizes something that's already there. Did you notice the repetition that is mentioned with each of these kings? And he died. He died. He died. If you look in Genesis chapter 36, where you have the generations of Esau, you come to the last one and it doesn't say he died. But now he's dead. And the writer of Chronicles is wanting to emphasize that, wanting to make it known. After you have these kings, you no longer have kings, but you have chiefs. You have prominent ones. They don't have the same authority that kings had. And I don't know the history as to why that took place, but it seems that The Edomites were then under authority. But there's a contrast, you see, to you folks who have just come back from the exile. You lost your king, but the kingship is not gone. Even though your kings also have died, the son of David will nevertheless come and reign again. And so he stands in opposition to these kings that Esau had. By contrast, Israel's kingship is a kingship that is eternal. And so it is that Jesus Christ has come. Let's note a couple of other references to the rebellion of the people of the world against the God of Israel. First of all, in verse 10, we have Nimrod who is mentioned. Now, as I grew up, Nimrod the Mighty Hunter, that sounded like a great name to have. It's not. It's not. He was called a mighty man, and it's not that he was necessarily the first of the mighty men, but he began to be a mighty man. That is, he was one who was ruthless. And to say that he was a mighty hunter before the Lord, it means in the Lord's face. It's in opposition to the Lord. If you go back to Genesis chapter 6, where you have God beginning to work with Noah in regard to the flood, in verse 4 we read, "The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also after them, when the sons of God came to the daughters of men, that they bore children to them. These were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown." So what Nimrod does is that he goes and establishes his own city, being brutal against others in order to establish his city. He started a kingdom then to the east and ruled there in opposition to God. By contrast, we are told later on in the books of Chronicles about David's mighty men. And they were mighty men who were obedient, who served the Lord, who were faithful to him. Do you know where we find the mighty men listed in the Samuel Kings account? It's in chapter 23. And the first part of chapter 23, the first seven verses, talks about David, the sweet psalmist of Israel, and how he, through his writing of the Psalms by the Spirit of God, equips us in order that we might have the theology with us, in order to live as we ought to live. And now these are David's mighty men. Don't see that as a total separation, but you need to see that as something that follows after, that what David prepared for us, he prepared for his mighty men as well, in order that they might serve the Lord faithfully. They would be strengthened then to carry out the work that was given them to do. Another comment that we find made here reminds us of rebellion as well against God. In verse 19, there is Eber, who had two sons. The name of the one was Peleg, and his brother's name was Joktan. But Peleg is mentioned, "For in his days the earth was divided." Are you at all curious as to what that division was? In Genesis chapter 10, you have, is where this is quoted from. And in the second half of Genesis 11, it mentions again that, Eber had these two sons, Peleg and Yoctan. It doesn't say that in his days the earth was divided, but in the in between it talks about the division of the earth. The Tower of Babel, where God divided them because they were living in rebellion against Him. And then there's one other comment. There are I forgot to put the verse down where this is mentioned, but it's the Casluphim. Yes, verse 11. Casluhim, from whom the Philistines came. Now, if you're an Israelite, you know who the Philistines are. They're always coming against you. They're always being trying to destroy you. And of course, they're able to have such an upper hand against Israel so often because of Israel's disobedience. They had not been obeying the Lord as they should have done. So now, that gives you a picture of what chapter 1 is all about. Here are all these people who have been living in opposition to God and in opposition to His people. But we need not fear the nations. Instead, we are to fear Christ, who is the King that God has given to us. Certainly, God has included the nations in redemption. It was His intention to mention all of these names, reminding us that these are also going to come to be inheritors of the covenant that God gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Think of Japheth and Ham. And this is one that we often, I think, pass over in Genesis chapter 9, what God says concerning these two in relation to their brother Shem. In verse 27, here is the blessing that Noah is given. He also said, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem. Let Canaan be his servant." And so it's looking ahead to the time when Israel would take over the land of Canaan. But then, "May God enlarge Japheth and let him dwell in the tents of Shem." You see, Japheth, the nations that come from Japheth are to come to the Semites in order that they might receive the blessing of God and they might receive the redemption that God gives. And that's confirmed for us in just a couple of chapters after that, where we have the call of Abraham. "And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." The nations coming to Christ, coming to be partakers of the grace that God has given to us. And so Paul, in writing the book that we know of as Romans, in Romans chapter 11, talks about the Israelites and how they have been unfaithful. They have turned away, but because they have turned away, they have been broken off. It was so that we could be grafted in. Beginning with verse 11 of chapter of Romans 11. "So I ask, did they stumble in order that they might fall? By no means. Rather, through their trespass, salvation has come to the nations, to the Gentiles, so as to make Israel jealous. Now, if their trespass means riches for the world, and if their failure means riches for the Gentiles, how much more will their full inclusion mean?" He's looking forward, you see, to the inclusion of the nations and also to the coming back of the Jews to be with the people of God, to be united with us. Chronicles, then, is more a sermon than a history lesson, as has been pointed out. One of the men who's whose books I'm using as a man pastor in the Reformed Presbyterian Church of Australia by the name of Andrew Stewart. And he notes in there that this is more a sermon than a history. And it's a sermon that has this message: mend your ways. Recognize what God has done in sending you into exile and what he will do when, again, if you do not mend your ways. The nations have been recounted as remembered by God. And sin has brought this division, but God is going to unite his people through Jesus Christ, calling them not just from the descendants of Abraham, but from Ham and Japheth as well, that they too would come to dwell in the tents of Shem and join together in praising the Lord our God. So it is that God, who made the world, still rules the nations. And we fear him, not the nations. And we fear him lest we be exiled again, or even worse, that we be destroyed forever. Have you had to face the Lord's discipline? Of course you have. We all have. And you can think of various ways that you might have had to face the Lord's discipline in your life. It is given to you in order that it might yield the peaceful fruit of righteousness, is what James tells us. And so when you see the disciplining hand of the Lord, let it be something that brings you to mend your ways, that brings you to turn to him, to be satisfied with him, to trust him rather than to fearing the nations, to fearing those around you. It should bring you, as the writer of, as David in Psalm 2 says, to kiss the Son. That is, to be affectionate towards him, to love him, to honor him, and to enjoy his affection for you.